Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. Reach out to us, give us a call, send us a message, and we'll help you find their inner badass in yourself. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Dan Robin. How you doing, Dan?
I say tentative seven.
Tentative. I sensed that when you came in. I picked up on an energy.
Well, yeah. I told you, I ran right before I got here.
You went out running?
Yeah. So I'm tired, but the main thing is I got in a bad mood because my cardio is so bad. So part of the reason I'm late is I ran something like 4 miles.
You were disappointed in your performance.
Well, I timed it. The reason I was late is I was like, how long could it possibly take me to run 4 miles? Like, even if I run 10-minute miles, it's going to be 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And somehow it took me, like, longer. Some of it, I think I stopped to, you know, brush my teeth or something like that. But I was sort of, and something
you like brush
that
your teeth
hurt.
On the run?
Yeah, stop during the, I shave.
Wow.
Yeah, I bring a shave.
You do your ablutions while you're running.
Yeah, I do all that stuff while I run. It's good. I
pretty efficient.
Cut my fingernails. Toenails, that's harder. what I actually meant was I shaved like right before I ran, and that cut into my...
Your 40 minutes.
I didn't pay attention to how that affected the time.
You must be miscalculating the distance, because I can't imagine it took you... I can't imagine you're running slower than 10-minute miles.
Yeah, I don't think so. I was running normally.
Yeah.
I couldn't have. No, I wasn't, for sure. But I just lost track of something. Maybe I left the house a little later than I thought. Maybe it's longer than 4 miles. Maybe, you know, something.
Alien abduction?
But I thought, like, somehow in my head.
Alien abduction.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a period in the run that's just a complete blank spot to me. Yeah, like before I left, I probably just lost track of when I left the house.
Right.
You know, I wasn't paying much attention, and I was like, I'll get back. It'll still be noon. And then I probably answered an email or did something that ate
up. A lot of those little things add up, just putting on your sneakers and tying your shoes. And
but then I was late, so it was a bad. I always know when I'm in a bad mood because, little stupid things start getting me, like, enraged and, like, or not enraged, that's pushing, but, like, I'm reacting. I notice myself that I'm reacting to things in a bad way. And example is I jumped in the shower. I'm like, I'm late, so I'm in a rush. And I don't know if you wash with like a bar of soap, or do you use liquid soap or a bar of soap?
Liquid.
So then you were not going to know this. But I jumped in and it's like that little sliver
you get
left.
The sliver left.
The sliver.
Yeah.
And usually, obviously this happens, but I was just like cursing at the soap and like it's breaking apart because I'm trying to rush. You know what I mean? It's
breaking apart. Never happens when you get plenty of time.
Exactly.
That only happens when you're up against the clock.
And you never like find yourself cursing at a bar of soap unless you're just kind of in a bad mood and just kind of like things aren't, you're never like happy.
Right. Those are pretty
peaceful.
Good
you're never
problems
on,
to
you're
have.
Never on vacation yelling like curses at a bar of soap. You know what I mean? Like, and then even less annoying, like then I run out and I have these, even the intro to this, even as I start saying this, it's going to sound so stupid, but I have these new pairs of socks, and I didn't notice when I bought them. And ordinarily, this wouldn't matter, but it's my first pair ever in all my life that has an L and an R on it.
Really?
Like a left and a right.
Yeah. That's a kind of a 21st century thing, I guess. But yeah.
I don't even know if there's any different. I didn't look closely at them.
I think they're shaped differently, yeah.
And
it's much like the headphones. The headphones are marked left and right ear for some reason. And still don't understand.
I think it only matters if you're watching something.
Okay.
Was the idea. And
it's the same with the socks. It only matters if you're watching a movie.
Well, if I'm late.
Oh, right? If you're
because
late.
That was one more thing. So then I run out of there and I go to put on my socks and there's a stupid L going on my right foot. And I'm like, yeah.
So
like,
what did you do? Did I'm you like, say the hell with it or did you back it up?
I backed it up. But I'm cursing. And I noticed like my dog, like I yelled at the sock. So angrily that my dog reacted. And I was like, I've got to calm down.
You're
like,
scaring animals.
I'm scaring my dog because I put the L sock on the right foot. Then I'm late for everything. So the drive in, I was thinking like, all right, get it together. Like, reel it in. So now I'm like back to settling back into a seven. But anyway, that's the long story of why it's a tentative seven. Because I was
rising up into a
seven. I was kind of riled up between the run and being late. And the socks.
Hey.
And the soap.
Thin soap, that'll get anybody on edge.
Yeah, that's a real problem.
I feel for you.
It's a real issue.
Yeah, no one's ever on vacation in the Bahamas like cursing at their soap because it's, you know, you're like too keyed up. But I'm chilling back out. I'm settled back down.
Yeah, that's one of those problems that when we're living in the lap of luxury, you have sometimes.
And your soap
still annoys you, but
your socks.
It's preposterous.
Well, people always say that there, where they're like, well, things are, well, first of all, let's not take this example. We all agree. We all know this example is just a silly thing. But anything that bothers you in life, you know, your car breaks down. And people are like, oh, this whole idea of first world problems, like people are so much worse off.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, am I supposed to like not mind that my car broke down now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't do it. Like, it's impossible to be like, can you break, like, and if so, like, at what level does that, like, can you break your arm and go, oh, so what? You broke your arm. There's people in wheelchairs. They're like, oh, yeah.
All right.
You know what I mean? You can't shut down things that bother you.
No.
Because other people are worse, or 99% of the world would have to not acknowledge their issues, you know?
Like, that's a tall order.
Yeah, you're divorced, but so what? Other people are in way, way worse shape. Like, you can't, I mean, you can use it for perspective taking, but you can't, like, shut down things that annoy you, you know?
Yeah, there's a big story going around. I don't know if you saw it this week on the internet about a woman, I think she's 71 years old from England. And she has virtually no sensation of pain.
I saw that.
And it sounds great, but then she's screwing herself up left and right because she's not seeking proper medical attention when she hurts herself.
I did. So I just glanced at it. Is it that she really doesn't feel legit?
That's supposedly what they're saying. I mean, I'm sure it's a matter of degree. It can't be.
Because pain is a so subjective thing. You never know. Is the person screaming at a little thing? Are they feeling more, or are they just?
Well, I think the gist of the article was they've identified some genetic marker that signifies this quality. I suspect it's just the volume's turned way down on it. Because if you feel no pain, then you're effectively numb, right? It's like Novocaine. Then you don't feel any pleasure. You don't have any sensation.
You'd be falling down and stuff, right?
Right.
You couldn't even.
Right. So pain must just be on one end of the spectrum of sensation in general, right? Yeah.
But then wasn't there associate? Wasn't she also like, and it was legit, right? Like she gave birth and said it didn't.
Didn't and then I think they said she experiences no fear, which is kind of like that guy, Alex Honnold from the Free Solo movie. They put him in an MRI and they said he had virtually no activity in his amygdala.
Yeah. So it seemed to her, it was like everything's turned down, right? Like pain, fear, anxiety.
Yeah. I wonder if fun is turned down too. Pleasure.
I was thinking about that. They didn't really go into that.
They didn't go into it. It's all very subjective, but
did you watch the movie
Free Solo?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I love that movie.
Yeah. But that guy he comes across in the movie. Of course, I don't know him. I just saw the movie. But he comes across as very Mr. Spock-like. And you wonder if somebody who is that low neurotic, that unemotional, if they are having as much pleasure as somebody else in life.
Wouldn't you guess no?
I would guess no. Yeah.
Like I would guess, especially since with this woman, for example, it goes from pain to anxiety to fear. These are sort of different things. And she feels none of it. I can't imagine it's like, oh, but everything else is turned up to the normal volume. You know, it seems like she probably eats stuff and goes, it tastes fine, but
everything's probably like a 7 to her.
Yeah, exactly.
Scary movies aren't doing the trick for her, that's for sure.
Yeah, she's watching horror movies. Like, someone could really break into the house and she would be like, oh, this is not scary. So,
which is not good for survival. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd think. None of this is good for survival. You need pain.
But in today's modern world, I guess you don't need it so much.
We talked a little bit about that last podcast, right? Which is you need anxiety and fear and pain if you don't, in general, to survive. But in modern society, it's turned up way too high. So we talked last time for anyone who, I can't imagine anyone wasn't listening. I think everyone should be listening to every podcast, of course, I assume. But we said that, you know, people get a panic response like a rhinoceros is attacking you when you have to like give a public speech.
Oh, yeah, they do.
You know, it's just keyed up too high. Or like you freeze. Right. That's another thing. In real danger, people freeze.
Right.
It's terrible, right? You know, like you freeze when you shouldn't freeze. You're adrenaline shoots when it shouldn't shoot, and when it does shoot, it shoots too hard.
Yeah. I was listening to somebody, it might have been Dr. Lyle, and they were talking about that freezing, and they were saying they think it's a relatively modern phenomena, but I don't think so. Because they're saying only if people are watching you is when you freeze in a performance. But I feel it's so innate. It must be even when you lived in a small tribe, eyes are on you.
So they're saying modern meaning like 1,000 years modern or like?
Oh, no, like 2,000 or something, okay. Some thousand, I think. But Dan, here's the other side of it. So I was listening to the Beat Your Genes podcast, the Evolutionary Psychology podcast, and somebody called in, and you would just mention that often we find ourselves with too much anxiety considering our environment right now. There's the other side of the coin where there's not enough stress or anxiety. So people, this person was like living with their parents, and they were taking some college courses, but they couldn't find any motivation, and they would like fall asleep. They couldn't read the assignments. They had trouble even attending class. I guess the solution to that is to put yourself in a more survival-oriented situation, like move out of your parents' house, and now you have to go to work, and you have to pay for rent. You actually have the pressure of surviving behind you, and then that's going to stimulate your motivation. Because as it is, they feel like they have everything they need, so they can't find any motivation. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. It's very relevant for me because I have kids going through these ages, you know?
Yeah.
So my oldest daughter is about to graduate college and like start her life. You know, as a parent, I always lean toward like, look, we're here. You have a security blanket. You have a security net, mm-hmm. I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Safety net. So if, you know, anything happens, we got it. You know, she'll be like, I can't afford rent. Be like, we got it. You know what I mean? Like if, you know, I
think it's a fine line. So you have to give them the safety net, but you have to let them feel some pressure to survive, or why would they? I guess they might, but there's probably the danger that they just don't even try.
I mean, maybe the middle ground. It depends.
Not your kids. Yeah, I mean, in general.
It depends on person to person. But if for my kid, maybe I could talk this whole thing through. Explain the whole reasoning and be like, yes, we're always going to be a safety net, but it's not going to be right there for you. Like if you can't pay your rent,
right,
you're going to have to move out. And the reason is this, like you need the motivation.
Your kids are smart enough that they could probably hold those ideas in their head at the
really,
same time.
But just so you know, and to apply the pressure, be like, just so you know, I'm really not going to pay it. You know what I mean? Like, like you really don't have it. And you see it. I have other examples in my life. Things get paid and then they just don't strive.
They get stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that in my family. And the longer somebody spends in that position of inertia, it seems like it's more difficult to get out.
Yeah. Yeah, not even, and you can take blame and fault completely out of it. It's just the science of it or the biology of it.
The biology of it. How stimulated is the nervous system?
But I actually, just from that little conversation, I think I might think hard about how I'm going to present that to my daughter. I think it's probably a good idea, right?
I think it's a good idea.
Like you have something on the line.
Yeah.
Because also I think they'll enjoy things more, like work. If they're like, I'm going to this job, but I can leave tomorrow and my parents will just pay for my rent, you know, then how do you get motivated? You know, you know, and then you probably like work less. You're like, I'm hauling myself in here for nothing.
It hurts your self-esteem as well. So if you use that model that Dr. Lyle does about this inner audience, if you are not motivated and you're not doing something on a daily basis, you start to feel bad about yourself, but you still don't have the motivation to get up. So it can be kind of a negative cycle, I imagine, where you're getting negative feedback loop, but not quite enough to just get up the couch and get going.
Right. Well, you can get stuck too. Like picture that example, like my daughter going to a job and she's not motivated. She might be like, I'm going to work. What do you want me to do? Like, you know, it's just sort of feeling.
Have you ever done that, Dan? I certainly have been doing something and you're not motivated. So you're putting in an effort that's subpar for what you could offer, and it feels crappy, right?
Yeah, all the time.
I call that life.
I think that's everything. Can I come up with an example where I'm not doing that? No, nothing comes to mind. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I've been highly motivated in my life, and I've been highly unmotivated. And being highly unmotivated, it's not a good feeling, right?
Yeah. I know we don't always bring back to, you know, our base of jujitsu. It's hard. That motivation, I struggle with it all. I've struggled with it for years. I mean, the good thing is I still am there, but motivation's tough for me. I'm having it. I go through phases where I just get, you know, and I'm sort of in one now where, like, because what happens is people start saying, oh, just go for fun, right? Like, it's fun. Meet your friends and roll around.
Right.
Like, that's not really a motivation in a way, no. Right? Do you know what I mean? Like,
and it takes effort, and you're uncomfortable often. So there needs to be something more than just having fun. I mean, it helps keep me fit. And, you know, since we competed last year, I have a competition weight in my mind. You know, I'm supposed to be 175 and a half for no gi. So the good thing about that is, like, I woke up today and I was 180. So, you know, 4.5 pounds over competing weight. That starts to be like the stop mark for me, where, like, I don't want to get heavier than this. And the pressure of looking good for the academy, relatively fit, because I want to represent, those are all motivating factors. And you could call them stress or anxiety or something. I guess it's, what is anxiety when you have a level, a certain high level of stress would qualify as anxiety, but
right.
But it's a good kind of stress. So it helps me be relatively fit.
Yeah. And you used to walk around at a higher weight, right? Like, so that's what's good about it. Like,
yeah.
Once you hit that competition weight.
I was 15 pounds heavier. I was 195 at one point. Yeah.
Right. And so now you've set a new norm for yourself.
I've set a new norm. Definitely. And I'm probably way healthier because of it.
And anxiety is part of it, right? Like, you start feeling anxious if you start getting up into the 180s.
Definitely. Yeah.
I guess in about the last week, I gained like about 7 pounds and then lost it in the same week. Like, I can't be healthy, right?
That. Yeah.
Maybe that's why I don't feel so good when I'm running, because I left on Wednesday, a week before
you went
Wednesday.
To Seattle.
Yeah.
How was your trip?
Good.
Did you get any attempted muggings?
No.
No. That's unusual.
The only thing that happened, and it's a non-story, so don't get, you know,
I'll
tell you right now.
That.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, it's a non-story.
Okay.
But I was crossing, I get like the walk signal, right?
Yeah.
So I'm walking, I walked across while I have the walk signal, and a car wanted to turn.
I understand. Like, but you have the walk signal,
yeah,
so you have the right of way.
So I'm walking, and I'm walking pretty good clip, you know?
Yeah. Like,
and some kid yells out of his car. I guess some kid yells, "Hey, get the F out of the way." Like, you know, yells at me at the
window.
Was he
the driver?
Yeah, the driver.
Young guy or driver?
And I was just in this sort of space.
Did he say F?
No, he didn't. Yeah, he said that. So he's like, "Hey," and I'm like, I just get, like, I was in this spacey mood, and I just, so the reason it's a non-story because there's no, I just, like, I kept walking. I just gave, like, pointed up at the walk signal.
Did you point with your middle finger or your index?
No, my regular finger. I just pointed at the, I didn't look at him, and I just
pointed.
I just gave, like, a point at the walk thing and kept walking.
And you didn't turn your head back?
I didn't do anything.
That's a good move. That was very dismissive. That was a power move.
I guess.
Yeah. I like that, Dan.
Of course. You have
Dan, your instincts are always correct. It's amazing. Right. I mean, we had the whole thing about instincts last time.
Yeah.
If people could get your instincts, they'd be all set. Instead of saying, follow your instincts, we should start telling people, follow Dan's instincts.
I think I'm like, of course, then you sort of have a second of, like, a block later, like, maybe I should have, like, stopped and
that,
yelled
no,
at him.
No, dude,
or
that,
you know,
was like, perfect. Pointing to the sign. Boom.
Yeah,
you're saying, you're so dopey. I'm pointing the sign, and I'm not even going to bother to turn my head and acknowledge you.
I guess. I didn't really think of any of that.
Yeah, that was,
I think,
fantastic.
It was just the mood I was in.
That was the perfect response. If I could sit and plan and think about it, that would be the response I'd come up with if I planned, thought about it for
well,
a day.
That's good.
Yeah.
So one interesting thing about Seattle, though, is everyone there that I talked to, or I mentioned the story, I was like, are there people like this here? They all had this funny take on it where they're like, yeah, there's a lot of that. But if you can follow me, it's like, it's because no one here, it's like there's such a lack of aggression here. Like,
that's really funny, huh?
They're like, people are always mouthing off because no one fights anyone.
Nobody,
like, no one
pops anybody in the nose.
And I was like, that's an issue, right? Like, they said anyone can mouth off because no one... They said, and it was sort of funny, like, every single person I said that to, I guess, you know, Ken Jenkins, because he, and that, like, he said it.
Yeah.
And then he lived in Seattle a while. And then my friends from Seattle also, they're like, if you just stop and said, what did you say? And it's like he would have been horrified. And then, you know, and it's like in Boston, not at all. Like, they'd probably fight you. Like, it's sort of like, and of course, who knows? Maybe in
Seattle. I just read an article the other day, Dan, that they named Seattle as the worst dating city in America.
Okay.
And it was some other podcast that does all about dating and everything. And they said, I wish I remembered what the tagline was. It was something like, the women are unhappy basically the women are miserable and the men are wimpy and passive.
Was that
what they said? They said you can't get a guy to approach a woman there. If there's an empty stool, they won't sit next to a woman, and the women are just like waiting and annoyed that men can't.
Well, it's a culture of
pull themselves up,
of championing non-masculine traits, right? Like, so it's sort of like, yeah, it's sort of, you know, like the, well, yeah, think about it, you know what I mean? Like,
so this could be the future
man bun. Well, it's heading that direction everywhere, right? Like, so I sort of get the idea. This is what I was thinking, and again, it's all the gray areas. Like, I don't want people to think I'm too extreme on this. Like, I get you don't want people challenging to fight someone that yells at you in a car. Like, I get all that.
Don't want people yelling obnoxious things at somebody walking across a crosswalk.
There has to be. So this is the issue I wanted.
So wait, why did that guy have to do that? I mean, if you walked in front of his car, what time did it take? I know you can't do a 10-minute mile, but you're going in front of his car literally was 3 seconds,
well, I was walking probably faster than I ran, apparently, so...
So yeah, maybe like 3 seconds. So you
probably less, right?
Let's be generous. So you took 3 seconds out of his life, and he's going to yell a nasty comment.
Yeah. And I didn't even see him. It's not like, you know, I walk right in front of the car. Like, I'm always pretty polite about that. I always have a problem with that when I stop my car and wait for someone to walk, and they kind of stroll.
They saunter.
I'm always like, I'm just like,
geez. Do you yell, get the F out of the way?
No, but I just to myself or like to whoever's in the car, I'm like, knees to chest, buddy, get moving, like, you know what I mean, like, haul it. I'm, you know, I stop for you. I'm the one who could kill you, but I don't do that. I give the courtesy jog. Like, if someone stops for me, I do like a courtesy.
I do that. I like tilt my head back like I'm running, but I'm actually I maintain the speed, but it gives the illusion.
I agree. It's like a courtesy thing. You kind of shuffle, like, okay, I'm moving because you stopped for me. But so I'm always do that. So it's not like I waited, but that's what I was interested in. This idea of that when there's no threat. You can't have, like, no threat of getting hit, right? Like, I mean, you could be out somewhere with your wife or girlfriend and, like, someone will just bother them or bother you. If there's no threat of getting hit.
I think you're right. I think there's another issue, though. One of the great things about training in jiu-jitsu is you get to strangle somebody in a safe environment. So you can express your natural aggression. So then don't you think if you were over there training for an hour – and you choked a few people, strangled a few people, and then somebody walked in front of you, you have less animus just sitting there waiting to express itself because you're already expressed all that aggression.
Yeah.
So you're less likely to go, hey, get the F out of the way. I guarantee you that guy had not expressed his aggression that day before that.
It is actually a good point. It's hard for me to picture. I'm sure it exists, obviously, but it's hard for me to picture someone that does jiu-jitsu yelling, get the F out of the way, like, when, you know what I mean, to someone.
No,
like
they might. It's not perfect, but I think it's a release valve. It lets some of that steam off that's just there.
And then the other thing, which we might have talked about, which is if you spend all day fighting with people, not all day, but, you know, you go to the gym and you fight with people.
On the regular. Yeah.
You lose some of that macho feel, like that insecurity. Like if someone yells, you're less likely to actually confront them
because you're
like, you know, you don't have some sort of insecurity of like, why I got to show this guy that I'm not scared of him. You know, you're like, I'm not scared of him. So I don't care. You know, like,
you don't need to prove anything to yourself.
Yeah. You have nothing to prove. So you're just more relaxed about those kind of things. You're more willing to walk away from fights or conflicts because you're not insecure.
I think so.
You're not. Like,
and you also understand the consequences of fighting. When you see people actually fighting, you're like, oh yeah, this can be really unfun if you're on the wrong side of it. This can suck. It can be painful. So you're not so quick to jump in and fight somebody.
Yeah. But I think Seattle's one example, but everywhere I think they're just trying to crush the idea of any sort of violence, which is good. Like, you don't want violence, but it reaches a point. Like, I thought of it like when my kids were on the school bus ways back, and I was like, what if some kid walks up and like hits my kid like right in front of me? Like, I can't do anything, right? Like, all violence has been outlawed in any way, right? Like, I can't grab him, I can't, you know, without possible real trouble. And it gets a little confusing where you're like, I can't. It's become, the norm has been the law handles everything, right? Everything. You must allow the law to handle everything or you're in trouble, and then
that's
that doesn't
a little scary,
it doesn't always work, right?
No, I was just listening to Joe Rogan podcast, and he was talking to this Yale professor who got into a brouhaha a couple of years ago, and he was talking about the Stand Your Ground law. He referenced some events. I don't know what he was talking about, where somebody killed somebody because they got in an argument. I thought the Stand Your Ground laws were in your house. He was talking about they're outside in a parking lot someplace. So I don't know. I don't know if it's Texas. I don't know what state it is where they have these crazy laws.
Not Massachusetts.
Not here.
Not Seattle.
But I also don't believe on the other end of the spectrum where he's like, you should be compelled to flee the area. And if somebody insults you, you should be compelled to leave. And I'm like, that, what? So now we're just giving all the power over to the obnoxious insulting people. That doesn't make sense either, right?
Well, did you have this with Mike? It reminds me of with my kids in school. They were all three were taught this. And I think this is what they're taught everywhere now. It's hammered into every kid. It's if someone hits you and you hit them back, that makes you just as bad as them.
Did they say that now? Is that the thing?
They tell all the kids. And I was like, that's completely
that's
wrong.
That's really not correct.
That's not wrong at all. That makes no sense if you think about it for 1 second. Right? Like, no, someone hits you, you hit them back.
Now, let me ask you, Dan, let's parse this out. What are some of the reasons why you should hit them back?
What are some of the reasons?
Yeah.
Well, so then they won't hit you anymore.
Exactly. That's the most important reason. If you don't hit back, they will likely continue to hit you. So it's not equally bad. You're not talking about one strike versus one strike. You're talking about an initial strike. And then this one is standing against untold number of other strikes that are coming. That's why it's just and the right thing to do.
Right. It was my kids' first lesson, and I had to explain to them that the school is not always right and that they have to listen to me over the school. I basically had to tell them, usually I will agree with what you're told by the teachers in school, but this one is wrong. It wasn't like with my kids, I had to worry about them.
So hard for the schools too, because I'm sure they get some litigious parents rolling there.
Well, it
with
makes
their
sense
lawyers,
for them,
right?
Though, because they're just we just don't want you fighting. Like, just they're going to do a sweeping law that says nobody hit anybody. And actually, the actual laws are kind of like that, right? They're like, look, nobody hit anybody. I mean, that's why you're not, you know, right? They're just like the easiest thing. We don't want everyone out there making a decision of when you hit somebody and when it's just and when it's not, because there's too many stupid people who are going to do it at the wrong time.
But you have to, Dan, that people are making that decision. Yeah. I mean, they are all the time. But like you're saying, at the level of the law, you have to come up with some boundaries where it's like, well, now you stepped over the law. So this is clearly wrong. But there's got to be a lot of gray area, I'm sure, right? And we can't just think we're going to legislate the whole thing, right? It's too nuanced. It's too circumstantial and tricky, right?
Yeah.
If some guy grabs your daughter by the arm, you're not allowed to just clock them?
Yeah. Well, an adult.
Yeah.
Another kid, you couldn't do anything. Really.
Another kid is different. Exactly. So it's very nuanced.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you could write laws that's going to take into account every circumstance that's available.
Right. But sometimes the solution is just don't be violent ever. If anything happens, you call the police, you know? And then it becomes, there's discretion, right? Like we know police officers, I'm sure they're like, well, I would let this go, but maybe this other guy wouldn't let it go. You know, it's sort of not.
But the answer can't be always to call the police because, you know, the police aren't instantaneous, right? They can't be there immediately. So something's happening. Somebody's going to get killed or dangerously hurt. Then some intervention might have to be immediate, right?
We've talked about it before that I think we talked about in terms of like a fight at a sporting event or a concert. And everyone looks and sees people fighting and says, look at those two idiots. And I always think, like, probably, but maybe it's one idiot, like one bad guy. Like, you don't know that they're both bad guys. And everyone, my take is that it's reached a point where most people think the only proper response is cowering. Like, you're a good guy, like, if someone's bothering you, and, you know, if you have a drunk at a thing, it's picking a fight, you should basically cower. And then you're all right. Then you didn't do anything wrong. Then he's the bad guy. If you stand up, you start yelling back, you tell him, sit down. He shoves you, you shove back, you're just as bad. You know, I think a lot of people see it that way. But I think most people see it that way.
I think so. I think it's a simplistic way to look at it. And it's kind of wishful thinking. Well, if we all just sit down, then everyone will sit down.
Yeah.
Probably not going to work. They also have this theory now that I saw the last couple of weeks come up in that in the Stone Age times, they're saying, I don't know how do they know this? This is a completely unproven theory that if somebody came along who was particularly disagreeable and narcissistic and was controlling too many people and was too strong and violent, that the group would gather together and murder the person. And in this way, we've somehow taken those super narcissistic genes out of our society. But Dan, how would they know that?
That's a good question.
It's got to be complete conjecture, right?
Cave drawing of that happening or something?
I don't know. What do you think? Does that feel right to you? I think that could happen in certain... I don't think it happened a lot.
It has to be speculation.
But I'm just asking you, if you just were going to conjecture about it, I bet you that has happened in history. Like, people are like, this guy's a maniac. We can't let him keep doing this.
But isn't that a thin line? Because aren't those the people that become leaders of whole groups too? Super narcissistic, super disagreeable, super aggressive.
Yeah.
Right? That's who leads whole nations and whole tribes and whole...
I think so.
So that's a thin line between that and getting thrown off a cliff, I guess. Maybe that's the risk. You're like, I put myself out here to lead and then there's a better chance I'll be thrown off a cliff. That makes sense to me. That sounds like Animal Kingdom stuff, right? Like if a lion's like, I'm taking over this whole pride, they're much higher risk of getting killed, but then they might take over the pride too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the deal. Like, it's like you take your shot at being the aggressive, overbearing one that leads everyone. And if you know, it's a shot, and either you get it or everyone rises up and turns on you.
Yeah, maybe. I think so. I think that happens in a lot of those revolutions, right? In China and in different places, certain leaders emerge maybe in the beginning or the intermediate stage, and then a new group comes in and wipes them all out.
Yeah. So maybe that's human nature. I don't know.
Interesting stuff, Dan. So we were also talking about how you've been mugged around the world.
And
you've survived.
I gotta edit that.
What's that?
Attempted mugged.
Attempted muggings around the world. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Paris,
New York.
Seattle, New York. Anywhere
else?
No,
not Seattle. There was not a mugging in Seattle. A couple in New York.
You are pitching a shutout.
Yeah, the Ofer.
They've never gotten a single nickel out of you.
Anything from me. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, there's mug attempts from around the world. But yeah, they never succeeded for one reason or another. And it's not like, to be clear, it's not like because I have my anti-mug strategy. You know, it's just none of them worked for one reason or another.
Yeah, it's a pretty good...
And they're actually all different, right? Because we've said all the stories on this podcast at one point. Yeah. So again, I'm sure all the listeners are like... The listeners can tell me the episode numbers and stuff. They probably have them all memorized and the titles.
I think you should write a book how to protect yourself from muggings.
But I did different things each time.
That's why you would have different chapters. It would be a book. Otherwise, it would just be one.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And I again pulled my gun, which I never did, by the way.
I cowered. You didn't cower.
I never cowered.
You'd never cowered.
Yeah.
That speaks to something.
Yeah. And I never didn't react, too. I never froze.
You never froze.
So that's good. That, which actually is one of the most boring ones that I probably never even told on the podcast, was in New York City.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
How old were
15.
You? 15 years old.
Yeah, I got on a train and went.
By yourself?
Yes. I was meeting someone. So I was only temporarily by myself.
So you're out in Long Island and you hopped on a train?
No, Westchester.
Westchester.
There's a train that goes straight to Grand Central.
Okay.
And I was walking across from Grand Central to Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
Which is like across the city. Someone saw me, you know, little lost-looking kid walking.
Little scrawny 15-year-old. Yeah.
And he just walked up and said, hey, he was like, hey, I don't remember exactly, but the idea was, he said, like, hey, do you have the time? And I was like, uh-oh.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, so you instinctively knew.
Yeah, it just didn't seem good.
Right.
He was just walking, you know, like, why are you walking aggressively toward me to ask me the time?
He really needed to know
the time. Like, and I'm like, so I just kept going. He goes, give me the time.
He was late for his podcast.
And then he got, and I'm like, no. And he stops and he's like, hey, give me your wallet. And I'm like, what? I think I told you this once before, but I don't think I said, what? And I kept walking and he goes, give me your wallet. Give me your cash. Give me your money. Whatever you have. And I'm like, what? Give you my wallet? And like, I just kept walking. And he's like, yeah. Hey, stop walking. And I was like, stop walking? And I kept walking. And I walked into the middle of the road.
Nice.
And I was like, stop walking? And he's like, stop walking. And he's following me for a while in the road. But then cars are like...
So when you say the middle of the road, Dan...
In Manhattan.
So you're in the middle of the street?
Yeah.
Like on the double yellow line?
There wasn't a double yellow line.
So it was just one-way traffic, but you're in the middle of the street.
Yeah. And it, like, cars were more witnesses.
You're more in the open.
Yeah, cars were kind of at first going around me and going around us. And then they were like stopping and like honking. And
nice.
The guy's looking around and he's like, eventually like, damn it. And like just got irritated
and
left.
Well done, young Dan Robin.
And again, I wasn't like, there was no part of me as a 15. I wasn't like, here's my strategy.
It
felt normal. Like it felt like I was confused. I was like, my actual thought was sort of like,
but part of you knew you were in danger. So,
because I think, I mean, I knew it was happening, but I think a lot of these situations getting mugged, and I think most people could attest to it. You really do feel a lot like, what is going on? Like 2 seconds ago, I was thinking about, I have to meet my friend.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm suddenly something totally different's happening. And it's weird. It like puts you in a weird mindset. And people always underestimate that when they're like, I would do this and that and that. And they underestimate that you're confused. You're like, what is going on? You're suddenly in a situation. That's what we talked about with like a fire breaking out. They're like, I would jump up and I would get a coat. And you're like, no. You're more like, what, am I in a fire suddenly? Like I was about to just see a show, or like suddenly I'm in a am I really running for my life to get out of a theater for a fire? You know, like, and it's confusing.
Yeah, disorienting.
It's disorienting. So I felt disoriented. My reaction was sort of this, you know, it was sort of normal. I was just like, what do you mean? They try to get me to stop, right? I think I've heard later, like, if you stop, that's then what are your options? You know, you can't do anything. But in retrospect, that's a little similar to the Paris one, right? Where I just kept saying,
you're baffling them because you're saying,
messing
what?
Up their
script. So now they're like, you're making it difficult for them to decide their next course of action. Because if you're like, no, and then maybe they'll run after you and grab you. But if you're like, what? They're like, well, maybe he's about to stop. So you confuse them.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't intentional, but looking back, that's probably what was happening. Like their script is all screwed up.
Yeah.
And even if I stand ground and to fight, maybe they just fight or take out a knife or do something. But I'm like, I'm not fighting.
Right.
And I'm not running. Right. I'm not.
So their next course of action becomes more difficult for them to decide, which just delays everything. Yeah.
But once again, he didn't have a weapon, which I said, I mean, that changed. Once the weapon comes out, here's everything, you know. Here's my wallet, but he didn't have one there. He didn't show me one.
And he wasn't close enough to grab you, actually.
Maybe he could have grabbed me.
Could have grabbed you.
But that's another level for them, too. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they might not always be like, we're going to get physical now. You know? They might not want, really.
Yeah.
In their head, they might be like,
say, hey, give me your wallet, and you give them your wallet, and a cop comes, they go, I didn't tell him he had to. I didn't threaten him.
I asked for money.
Yeah.
That's true. It's another level. So plus,
plausible deniability of the crime, I guess.
Yeah. And it's just, I assume he's done it before. I'm assuming that's not the first time he's mugged anyone. And maybe their script is, I walk up to these likely looking candidates and I say,
hey, give me your money.
And they stop and they look scared. And then they say one or two things. And then I yell and then they get scared and then they give me the money.
Yeah.
And once it goes off that, they're like, what are we doing now?
Right.
Like, where are we? Like, this is not how this goes.
Yeah.
And then it's easy for them to be like, let me just
find somebody else.
Yeah, let me just try this again somewhere else. They'll be like, look, this kid's going to walk away. He's not, I didn't do anything. He can't get me.
He's asking me questions.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. But anyway, that's over. That was a zero, the Paris one. And then Fort Lauderdale or Miami was different. That was me running. That one I had to run. That one I couldn't.
I don't think they were going to go for the what? Give you my money? What do you mean?
That was, they pulled up in a car and jumped. They were in the middle of the night. They pulled up in a car and like jumped out.
I think part of the payoff was to get physical with you.
Yeah. That was going to be.
I think it was going to get physical before they even asked for anything.
I think that was going to be a beating. That one, I don't think, what? That would have just been a beating. Especially when there was a bunch of them. There was four or five people there.
That could have been bad. Yeah.
But I think another strategy, because I had a friend that got hassled or mugged in Baltimore, and they were like, he saw them like a block away, and, you know, he stopped and like, you know, like that rabbit or the deer that sees them, you know, like stopped and just
froze
and looked at them. And they actually yelled. So maybe they're familiar with the psychology. He said they yelled, hey, don't move.
Yeah.
Don't move as they were walking closer.
Yeah.
And they kept, that's the only thing they said was don't move.
Right.
As they advanced on him. So I was like, what'd you do? And he was like, moved. Like, he just ran. He was a quick kid, too.
He ran?
Yeah, he just ran.
He got away?
Yeah, he got away. But I was thinking, even when I heard that, I was like, these guys might have a leg up, that they understand the psychology, that they're like, if I just say don't move,
he might
not move.
Yeah.
You know? Because I could see it, right? You're confused. You're scared. You have that combination of the things we've been talking about. You're disoriented. You're scared. You have the...
You're like, maybe if I don't move, everything will be okay. Yeah, because nothing bad is happening right now.
Yeah.
Yet. Yeah.
Exactly. And like, I'm listening to him. That would be me not listening to him. And
right.
Why is he, if he's saying that, maybe he's going to just, you know, whatever it is. And then they've got you, you know.
Not good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I bet that's common, right? Like, don't struggle, don't move, don't fight. They just say that, and people in that confused state. But again, I think it's important that people understand that confused state, because then everyone's so flippant. They're like, well, I would just fight, or I would just, why would anyone listen? Why would anyone listen if someone says don't move in that situation? And I think they're not picturing the situation clearly, that you're disoriented.
They're totally disoriented. Yeah. You know what? That reminds me of this scene that I watched on YouTube. It's from the movie Saving Private Ryan. I saw the movie when it first came out, of course, and I forgot how powerful that movie was. So you got to check out this scene then on YouTube. It's called The Death of Mellish. I watched it. It was so powerful. That movie was so well done. And there's a couple things going on in that scene where I guess the character's name is Mellish. He's up like on the second floor or some kind of tower area, and he's fighting with the German soldier. I think he kills one German soldier, and then he ends up in kind of hand-to-hand combat with another. And there's another guy, I forget what this character's deal is. He's on the stairwell, and he's got some kind of machine gun or something with all this ammo, and he's frozen in fear. So he's the guy that's frozen, that's staying there. And he hears Mellish upstairs fighting for his life. And all he has to do is walk up three stairs and blast this German soldier, and it's over. But he's stuck. He can't. You remember the scene? So powerful,
just
right?
Just frozen, right?
He's frozen. But then Mellish is fighting, and he gets on top of the German soldier, and he takes out his bayonet. And it's almost like a really brutal MMA fight when I watched it. But somehow he gets turned over, and now the German soldier is on top. And he gets the bayonet away from him, and he's trying to put it into him. And then it's really eerie and creepy, because the German starts whispering. And in the YouTube video, they don't have the translation, I don't think. But when I watched the original movie, I think they had subtitled translations. And he's saying, take it easy. Don't fight it. It'll be easier. He doesn't say take it easy. He says, don't fight. Relax. This will be easier. It'll be easier. Shh. Quiet, quiet. And he kills him. And you can't really tell if it affected Mellish, if he stopped fighting as much, but he ends up dying. And it's something so creepy that this soldier is like giving him this like death lullaby, like lulling him into cooperating into his own death.
Right.
It's so disturbing. And then the soldier gets up and he walks out and he sees the other guy frozen on the stairs, and he recognizes this guy's frozen like a rabbit, like a possum. And he doesn't even kill the guy. He just walks by him. And he doesn't, he had no concern of his own safety. He just walks right by the guy.
Yeah, that was great. First of all, spoiler, Saving Private Ryan spoilers for those.
I mean, how old is that movie?
20 years.
I don't care. It's such a great scene. People
really
watch
scene.
The movie, great. But even more importantly, go watch this scene. You know why I pulled this up? It's because it reminded me of that moment I had a couple of weeks ago in training, when that obnoxious Pat Browning was choking me and he had my leg cut. And I started to have a stress response, and I couldn't move. And I heard this voice that was telling me, shh.
Pat
shh.
Browning was like the Nazi.
He was, he was like a Nazi
that's
soldier.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
He was like the Nazi soldier. In that case, he was in the role of the Nazi
case,
soldier.
Yeah. You could say that, Dan. But he wasn't talking to me, actually. No, I was hearing this imaginary voice telling me.
The Nazi in your head?
The Nazi in my head was telling me, you know, the devil on my shoulder, just be quiet, just quit, it'll be easier, tap, just quit. And I resisted that voice mercifully, and I got out. But I just find that interesting. You know, Khabib, when he fights, he gets to a certain point in the fight where he's on top of the guy, beating the guy up. He starts saying, just quit, I need to be champion.
I remember hearing that,
He's done it on more than one occasion. And he somehow, I think, piggybacking on that natural voice that's being heard in the universe somehow.
Because imagine you're under Khabib for 4 minutes and he's hammering you in the face, and you at some point these fighters have to be, unless the true animals out there, in the MMA world, but 90% must be like, I'm never getting out of here. You know what I mean? Like after a time, must be like, realistically, I can't get him off.
I just did some training with Jesse McGillicott, who's fighting at Cage Titans on April 6th. If you guys want to see a great fight, go down and watch that. And Jesse has tickets. Just reach out to him. He'll get you tickets. But at any rate, I was doing some training against the cage, and he was on top of me like that. And I was trying to get up, and he kept pulling me down. It's the worst feeling in the world, Dan. It's just exhausting. And yeah, you get discouraged. It's frustrating. And he really wasn't hitting me even really, you know, so
right.
just it's right. just You're an awful
really
feeling.
Beaten.
It's terrible. Yeah. Very difficult. But yeah, so he says that. So he piggybacks on that voice. And then I was listening to the new champion at welterweight for the UFC, Kamaru Usman. Mm-hmm. And he was on Rogan, and he said he has one loss, I think, on his record early, one of his first or second fights. And he was fighting this Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, and the guy got on his back. And he was like, oh, what am I going to do? And he heard the guy's corner saying, he's about to tap. He's going to tap. You got him. And he says, I think that he was vulnerable enough to admit. He goes, I think it got into my head and I tapped. And he wasn't making That's an excuse, funny. But he tapped. But it's interesting how we hear those voices and then, you know.
And it could help the guy on the other side if you're going after someone to think like he's about to tap might. Inspire you to keep trying, right?
I think so.
Because that's a big part of, I'm assuming, MMA, but in jiu-jitsu for sure, when even not as painful, but like that discourage, that voice that says like,
quit.
Like, yeah. Or take it even easier, not even necessarily tapping out, but like I go to pass someone's guard and I try five times and I'm like, I can't do it. Mm. And it's discouraging. Like, it's like then you're going some more and you're like, what am I even going to do?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're
like,
wired.
What's even the point?
Yeah.
Like, why should I try this again? I can't pass them.
Yeah, I think our nervous systems are wired that if we meet a certain amount of success, we stop trying that, which just is probably makes sense
right. Because
then you would just bang your head against a wall and not reproduce or survive. Yeah. So it probably makes sense. So to override it is challenging. You know, I told that story to Leo Akiki, our friend Leo.
Which story?
The one about I heard a voice in the Academy that was telling me
not
to quit.
To Pat story.
Yeah. Back to Pat's story. And he said, yeah, that's why I come here all the time, so I can hear that voice and tell it to go F itself. So he goes, he comes looking for that voice, which is a really kind of cool take on it. You know what I mean?
I never even thought of that.
I was bemoaning the voice. I was like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm still hearing this voice. But now I'm thinking it's universal. It's everywhere waiting to tell you to quit in some difficult moment. So if you can do it in the academy, which is a controlled situation, and it isn't life or death, you know, unless you are going with Pat Browning, he probably would kill me. Who, you know?
Yeah, he's a different
left
breed.
It up to him. But seriously, though, yeah, you can safely face that voice.
Yeah.
And tell it to go F itself.
Isn't a lot of working? I've had that voice just running. Not today, but... Where you're just like, I'm going to go for 5 miles, and then partway through, you're just like, I'm so tired, you know, and your voice is going, stop.
Right.
I don't know if you're like, if you ever run, but I've had that, or on a treadmill where you're like, that stop button is a big red button right in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, you can reach up in 1 second and end this pain. So, yeah, facing that, I think there's value to it. I haven't thought through the specifics, but there's got to be value in pushing through unpleasant things and facing them and overcoming them. And
well, it's certainly a metaphor. You know, if you succumb to that voice, you're just basically dying. You know, that's sort of what death is about, right? Just like, yep, we're not going to fight it anymore. We're done. I mean, it can be. So yeah, that's one of the other great things about jiu-jitsu. Get to feel like you're going to die sometimes and fight through it. Or you hear a voice that tells you just to curl up and die.
Yeah. Then there's other times though where I am not, you know, not in that mindset. It's just a friend, like more like where you can just tap or not. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that voice is rare, but I think it's interesting. It's something I need to think about more.
I feel like it applies more for a choke, or, you know, because then you can fight or not fight.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yeah. If somebody's about to snap your arm, you got to tap
or
you're just being foolish. Yeah.
Because I was thinking the last time I tapped on Tuesday, I guess, was someone threw like a weird one of those Eddie Bravo, someone puts on me in an electric chair.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what is this even? Like, even as he's doing
it's
it,
probably a good one
he's like, is this
to...
working? And I'm like, I just tapped. I'm like, what is this? Like tap, but it was like, there wasn't some life or death voice. It was like a different situation. Yeah. Is what I'm saying. It was like laughing. I was like, is this a thing? I was like, do you just have, like, is this on purpose or am I just, are you just doing, you know?
What was it, the twister you're in?
It was so called the electric chair, apparently. Oh,
it's like pulling your legs apart?
My legs were being pulled apart.
Yeah, that's probably a good one not to resist.
Twice on Tuesday, someone was pulling my legs apart. And I was like, twice in that day. I was like, what is going on? What is this?
Did you guys get together today before I came in?
So, and then you're always like, for something weird like that, I'm like, is this even a submission or, you know, or is this a thing or you just coincidentally have me like this?
Oh, yeah.
So I was laughing and I tapped and then he was like, it's called the electric chair. And I was like, oh, okay. I never heard of it. He said, it's one of those, you know, Eddie Bravo things. It's like.
Works apparently.
Apparently you can get caught in it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can get caught in it, but I'm not sure how to avoid it because I don't really know what it was, but. Again, that wasn't me like a voice in my, you know, it was a different scenario.
Different.
It wasn't like.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. I think it is the chokes where it's very subjective. Do I need to tap? Should I tap? Or when you're stuck, sometimes I get a feeling of stress response or panic, a slight panic if you feel like you can't move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're on the bottom, someone's at the top of you, you can't move.
I've had that claustrophobic response where it's a combination. I can't get out and then I'm having trouble breathing. You know, like I'm gasping for breath, but they're really crushing me and I can't get a breath in.
The reality is you're not going to die. You're not even going to pass out because you don't even need that. If you just relax, you don't even need that much breathing.
Yeah. So I've been able to avoid it. But that's when I hear I think that's when I've heard the voice.
Yeah.
Which is like, you got to end this. You can just tap and get out of here. And that's hard to resist.
That's hard to resist. Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm not going to feel as bad when I hear it in the future, but I'll still resist it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, think of Leo that wants to hear it.
Yeah.
Just to avoid it.
Yeah. That's a pretty good reframing of the whole thing, right?
It's not bad, actually, to just, if you hear the voice, to be like, well, this is part of the reason I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just pure, whatever it is, panic or fear or whatever.
Right. And yeah. I think when you shift your perspective on something, it's powerful. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to tap, though, too.
Definitely.
All that said, I mean,
sometimes
you can resist the voice and then
the other thing
wake
that,
up.
That Leo does to sing his praises here is he crams a lot into his life. Like he'll kind of like rush into the academy, get a lot of intense training and rush out. And I think I need to do a little bit more of that in my life. I think you can do that and be pretty effective.
Why aren't we going to rush from here to a bar?
Absolutely.
So
we're going to cram in some.
and then make the most of that time.
Absolutely, Dan.
Is this what you're getting at? Because I'm on board.
The other thing is, in light of the free soloing, I like that as a metaphor for life. I'm going to start free soloing life. I don't know exactly what that means, but it feels like our lives are so safe that there's, in the context of it, there's not a lot I could do. I'm not going to fall off a cliff, at least.
So you're going to free solo, but with no cliff involved.
Exactly.
It seems more appealing to me without the cliff.
It does. It's a bit of a stretch, but it's a metaphor. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but I suggest all of our listeners start free soloing.
I think it's sort of
in life, on cliffs or
mountains.
Isn't
it the theme of the podcast that sort of a or the recurring theme, like to push yourself in some way?
Yeah.
And to test boundaries in some way.
Yes.
And to get out of your comfort zone in some way. That keeps coming up a lot.
Definitely.
In the podcast. And I think that might be what it means, right?
I think that's what it means. You know what, Dan? I think we should, this is another great podcast. We should end it here with that advice to people. Tell that voice to go F itself and start free soloing life. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Sounds good? Thanks again for another brilliant podcast, man. Oh, we got to mention Craig Lewin again. Contact him if you want to learn how to swim better. Thank you for everyone for listening to the podcast.
A shout out to someone that always gives us respect.
Yeah, John Burke is a great supporter. Thank you, John. He's awesome. I think he comments. He's given us one or two reviews.
Did we ever say Rob Curran?
We said Rob Curran last week.
Okay.
Yeah, we should at some point acknowledge the people that have written reviews for us too. That was very nice. And Mike Schultz wrote a nice review. At the top of my head, I'm trying to think who else.
Yeah, it's not a okay. We'll get to you.
We'll get to you.
Right, and if we skipped you, write another good review.
That's it. Write another review, and then we'll finally mention
you. And a few more likes. That's the other thing. When we're like, could you click like, and people don't. I'm like, how hard could that have been?
To click a like on Facebook,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Or on the video or wherever. Yeah. Most of these things you click like or on or like the stars on a podcast.
Please do that. All of those things.
I mean, that's not that hard.
It's not that hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Now people are mad. Now
it'll be easier. Though. Yeah.
Just click it.
Click. Yeah. All right, Dan. Great job. See you folks next week.